Okay, thank you. I must thank the speaker. Do you hear me? Yeah? Of course, it's a pleasure to thank the speaker for being invited. In fact, I don't feel... Sorry. That's the beginning, but that's not the end. So, yeah. I'm going to be pretty disorganized as usual. So, okay. It's really an honor to be invited to the conference for the 60th birthday of Jim. Because, I have always in my career tried to understand what the TRICE formula is. And without his work, I would never have understood what we now understand. And still, I am working on small things around these things. And I am a bit ashamed because compared to the talk this morning, what I will say is utterly elementary, really completely elementary. So I'm sorry, I am not at the right level probably. I should not have been invited. But okay, so nevertheless, let's discuss what I want to discuss. So I want to try to give you a sort of review of the basic things for twisted endoscopy. In fact, some years ago, I tried to read the paper by Kotwitz and Schellstadt that was not published at that time, but was circulated since many years. And I had some difficulty because I am pretty slow in understanding all the details of the proof. I found it a bit complicated. Also, I thought it should be rather elementary. And I am pretty sure that the author also believed it should be elementary. And it was not really. And moreover, I needed to extend slightly the what they had done in order to cover so-called singular elements. They had treated strongly regular elements. And in trying to do that, I could not directly extend their method. And finally, I embarked in a program of going back to the very basic foundation of twisted endoscopy. Their book is called The Foundation of Twisted Endoscopy, and I go even at a lower layer. Okay, so I have other words to say about endoscopy. I should say that although endoscopy has a limited range of potential application to the study of Langlands functoriality via the use of the TRACE formula, and that most of the expected results lie beyond endoscopy, well, it is fair to say that nevertheless, it is necessary to extend to general reductive group the result à la Jacques Langlands or the result à la Arthur Clausel, or things like that, and the full power of endoscopy is needed for that. And if I understand a little what Jim Arthur has done, he has worked for many years in trying to adapt the tool, the TRACE formula, to the study of endoscopy. Not only that, but it was certainly one of his strong motivation. Can contradict me, he's not too far away. So endoscopy is also, as everybody knows, very important in the study of femoral varieties. So the aim, again, is to try to write the TRACE formula. So let me write something. So the blackboard is very clean, but still. So somehow we want to write the TRACE formula for some F. I will explain more details. Some constant, and it should be a linear combination of the TRACE formula for some endoscopic groups of function FH obtained by some transfer. So I want to try to explain that and to see what are the objects, just the basic objects of that. So in the twisted case, usually one works with a group G and an automorphism theta. And usually either one works with the two things or with the semi-Dirac product G cross theta that you can view as a subset of G semi-direct with the automorphism of G. Well, there is a slight point I want to make in introducing something slightly different. So, in fact, it turns out that in order, for example, to understand some of the construction of Kodwitz and Chelstad, I prefer to introduce what I call twisted spaces. So, this is very elementary, as you will see. So, what is a twisted space? So, it's a couple of a set L and a group G, where L is a homogeneous, it's a principal homogeneous space under G, and together with a G equivariant, map from L to the automorphism of G. And I call this map add L. And the obvious equivariance, just to state it, that add L of, say, GX must be add G of G times add L of X. Okay, so that's the obvious thing. And there is very little difference, but you will see it's important, it's easier to understand what are the automorphism and the interior automorphism. I want to define the interior automorphism of the space L. And that's something that will be useful for endoscopy also. So let's say that when you have, an action like that, you also have a left action, but you also have a right action. Since, you can write xj, it will be the add L of x on g times x. So now you have an action on the left and on the right, and the two actions are just connected by the automorphism. So it's somehow a sophisticated way to write the same thing. The only point is that if you are given an L, and if you take a delta in L, then you have you can put a theta equals add L of delta. Then this gives you an isomorphism with G semi-direct theta. The only point is that this isomorphism is not canonical, because when you can modify delta by an element in the center, and then you change this isomorphism. So it's more canonical to think of L than to think of this. That's the only point. Okay, no big deal, but it makes things more comfortable. In order, in particular, to think of interior automorphism of L, what are they? Well, you have two kind of obvious automorphism. First, if you are given a G in G, well, you can consider the conjugacy. So, say for example, X goes to J, xj minus 1, so x belongs to L. So this is a conjugacy. Now if z belongs to the center of g, you have another map, which is x goes to zg, zx, sorry. Just a translation. So this thing is certainly not present in a group. This is present only in such a space. And if you look at the two kind of automorphism together, they build a group which I call interior of L. So somehow you have a map from G cross ZG to both L, and the image is by definition this group. So it makes easy in that case to speak of inner form, for example. If if everything is defined over some field F and you work in the Galois cohomology, then in fact the H1 of Galois of say F bar or F over F, I will always be sloppy on this, or if you prefer, I will always look at fields of characteristic zero. So with value in M, interior automorphism of M, by definition, this will give you twisting inner forms. It will allow to define inner forms of the space M. And that's really the basic object for the study of the twisted trace formula. So let me state first the first small proposition, which is in fact due to Convitz and Chalstatt. So proposition, any L over some field F is an inner form of a quasi-split twisted space, L star. Well, by this I mean that L star is the semi-direct product of G star mod theta star, where G star is the quasi-split inner form of G. So L is over, so you have a couple, LG. And G star is just the quasi-split inner form of G. And theta star is an automorphism of G star that preserves a splitting in G star. And then this is canonical. You don't have you take this one, so where theta star preserves a splitting in G star. Okay, so that's the basic thing we will work with. Okay, so now for a while I just want to go on in developing the trace formula business. So what is the twisted trace formula? So of course you start with again with G over F. Now with F will be global characteristic zero by laziness, but okay. And G reductive connected. So in fact it turned out that I prefer to work with twisted spaces than with non-connected groups because it's more canonical. And then the basic space as usual is A of G, G of F, G of AF, where A of G is just with notation that everybody I guess understands, where AG is the split component in the center in the restriction of scalar from S to Q of ZG. Well, I use the same letter for the Lie algebra or its exponential. So I look at this as a subgroup. So that's okay. It's really isomorphic to a real vector space, but I prefer to put it otherwise you need another notation for the same thing. So, but it's slightly better to put it that way than to put a one, as Jim has done in the. For a long time. I think it's slightly better. It's also a very minor point. Okay, so once you have that, well, you can, of course, try to write the trace formula because, in fact, what is easy is that L of AF, if you have an X here, then you can define, rho x, so say phi, 4 phi, in the L2 of this thing, because in fact, such an element can be viewed as G of AF, GF times C c'est delta 0, where delta 0 is in L of F, I assumed to be non-empty. This is not automatic. This is an assumption. Otherwise, the story finishes. And okay. So, and delta zero acts on the quotient space. It's clear because it acts by automorphism on this. And here you have you are modulo GF, so you have the ambiguity that is enough. And so you have an automorphism. Delta zero induces an automorphism of this quotient. And after that, you translate by an element of GAF in the standard way. So that's the way it acts on the space. And more generally, if you take a function f in C infinity C of L of AF, then you can define rho of f as usual. And of course, the trace formula is to try to understand the trace or the renormalized trace, if the trace does not exist, of this operator. And this is given by a kernel, as usual. So the kernel, no big deal also. But after all, it's at the heart of the trace formulator, so it should be written sometimes. So you of course, have the kernel, the usual kernel, which is the sum for delta in L of f of x minus 1, so I will put a 1 here, delta y, and the f1 is just for sake of precision, it's just the integration over ag of f, sorry, of f of z delta dz. Okay, so that's the kernel. And in fact, one works more generally with another object. One usually introduces a character omega, character of G of AF, trivial on GF and AG. And you can, so sometimes put an F, and you simply consider KF omega of xy is just omega of x, kf of xy. Okay, so that is the general object treated by Kotwitz and Schellstadt. Just the language has been slightly changed. Okay, so the trace formula, maybe everybody knows here what the trace formula is. So let me simply write the part I will try to understand. So the part I will try to understand is the so-called elliptic part. So the TE of F and omega, well, this is just the integral over GA F mod GF mod AG of KF omega. I should say KE F omega of XX dx, where here, if I write ke of f, I sum here over only, but doesn't make sense for x different from y, over elliptic elements, only elliptic elements, le, the set of elliptic elements. I didn't say how you define an elliptic element, maybe you need to see that. So if you have delta in L, you have the adjoint L action on G. So you say that delta, for example, is semi-simple if this automorphism is semi-simple. And you say that it is elliptic if the center, so you look at the centralizer, at the center of the centralizer, at the speed component of the centralizer, and you ask it to be of the same dimension as the fixed point of any element on the, in L on the center of G. So you also have, I should have said, you also have AL, which is AG theta, where theta is any automorphism in the image of L of F. So this is a smaller subgroup, and elliptic means that the centralizer, we will discuss slightly in slightly more detail centralizer later. So, okay, so that's the basic object, and what do you get by a very elementary transformation, which is just the basic thing also for the trace formula, you get that with proper measure, you get that TE or F omega is just, well, some number I won't explain, it's just a determinant. And the sum for the delta in conjugacy classes, I call them gamma R, E, sum over conjugacy classes of a number, for example, that can be written, I will not give the proper expression, A of delta times an orbital integral for delta and omega, or delta of F and omega, where the orbital integral is, as you guess, and it's for F0, where F0 of delta is just the same, but the integral over AR instead of AG. Okay. And the difference of measure is reflected in that GL. Okay, so you have an expression like that. So that's the real start of the game. And what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Maybe I should write in detail the expression because it's important. So, what I call O delta of F omega is just the integral over GAF mod something I will explain, I delta of LF, that's the main point in making that, of omega of X F of X minus 1 delta X DX. So you have the omega, you have the delta, you have the F, and here I delta is something which is almost a centralizer. So I have to explain what it is. So, what is I delta? I delta is something which is in between G delta and G delta, with the notation of Arthur. G delta usually denotes the centralizer, the full centralizer of delta and G, and G delta means the connected component of the full centralizer. In fact, the good object lies somewhere in between. And the definition, I am not so sure of exactly what the good definition is in full generality. I suspect that it is as follows. So, for delta semi-simple, then you have the following definition for I delta. I delta, you can take it as G delta, the connecting centralizer, times ZL, the theta invariant element in the center. By theta, I mean any automorphism in the image of R. So that's one definition, but probably a better definition is as follows. You take G twiddle, which is the simply connected cover of G, times ZG. So this is the covering of G. And inside of that, you take the full centralizer, so G tilde delta. This makes sense. And now you project, you look at the image of this in G. So the image of this should be I delta. And I suspect this makes sense also. That's a good definition for unipotent element, but I'm not sure. The two definitions coincide for semi-simple element, but for unipotent elements, it may be slightly different, so I don't know. Okay, in any case, I have no evidence at all of what should be in general, so I don't know. But it seems that this definition is better because, for example, it can be put in the framework of schemes over the adults. And this plays a role in some subtle questions. So this should be the good definition. So no big deal up to now. Well, And the difference between the centralizer and the so-called stable centralizer is accounted in this number. So, okay, now, what else? Well, for reasons I cannot explain in detail right now, it's better to try to write this formula in terms of stable orbital integrals. So, what are the stable orbital integrals? So now I have to first make some comments on this object. So I need to use a notation which is slightly different. So it would look sophisticated at first, but it will play some role. So observe that GAF, for example, can be written with the notation introduced by Kotwitz and Schellstadt. But in the abelian situation, I prefer to think of it as that object, which means what? Which means what? It means that it's the H0 of the Galois of F bar over F in G of AF bar. This means that. Well, this notation has been introduced by Kotwitz and Schellstadt for tori. In fact, it's a generalization of the notation which is always used in Galois cohomology. One writes HI of F, say, in a torus. So it's just the HI of the Galois of F bar over F in T of F bar. That's what it is. So, and using this kind of writing, you're induced to write this. And at least for a tori, one can even define something which is even more sophisticated. One can write for a torus AF over F of some T, which means for a torus that it is the Galois cohomology of F bar over F inside T of F bar inside T of A bar, or if you prefer the quotient. So for a torus this makes sense, and this is written that way. This is very suggestive, and that's really the way to think on the object I will introduce. But one has to be careful when the group is not connected and things like that. One may try to define these things, and this works, but sometimes there is a grain of salt to be put in this, okay? So, what's the next thing? Well, in fact, one should also use not only groups, not only tori, but complexes of those objects. This was introduced again in Kotwitz-Schellstadt. They have introduced the cohomology of complex of tori, which is a very hypercohomology, it's a very standard. But this plays a strange role in the trace formula business. And I have tried to understand that, and it turns out that using ideas that were floating around by Borovoy and Breen and other people, in fact, it's possible to make sense of this using a quite elementary but a bit strange a priori cohomological object, which is something which will be very highly non-commutative. In fact, the most complicated object I will have to look is the following object. So I write I for I delta, and GSC, as usual, is the simply connected cover of the derived group of G. So I is a subgroup. I look at the simply connected cover of its derived group. And, well, this diagram is commutative. And this defines an object which is something of length 2, because this is in degree 0, this is in degree 1, this is in degree 2. I is any subgroup of G. Any subgroup.
I is centralized.
Yeah, but it's any subgroup of G. And by SC, I mean the simply connected cover of the derived group. I assume that E is reductive, is a reductive subgroup. It may not be connected. That's true. But the category of group with which I work contains some very mildly disconnected subgroups. Because you remember, the one we are interested in are in fact simply products of something maybe disconnected, but in the center, times a connected group. So the disconnectedness is there. It plays a role, but it's quite mild. And one can do all these things in that slightly larger category. I call this category quasi-connected groups. It behaves almost like connected groups. But it's true that they may not be connected. So if you look at such an object, well, it turns out that in this particular case, in fact, if you look at this thing and at this thing, they can be represented up to quasi-isomorphism by abelian objects. And so the big object is a hyper, is a complex of complexes, and it's again a complex, it's quasi isomorphic to a complex of abelian objects. And in fact, this is the way I understand the fact that although G over I is just a set, well, you will be able to define things that look like characters for the H0 of, say, of AF with value in I over G. By this, I mean simply, in fact, in that case, it's just the quotient as an algebraic variety, and I take just at the adult point of that. Well, I claim that one can define characters in a natural way using this construction. So, in fact, that's where the group, the abelian group mentioned this morning by Lomo, for example, but more generally. So, what do you have? In fact, it's possible to define a cohomological theory for kind of objects like that. One can define what I've called a crossed set. Well, I won't enter this technicality. It's not so important. This is basically the only case I use. And the point is that if you look at simply E mod G, it can be looked at as just this in degree 0, this in degree 1. A quotient is just something of length 1. And now you can simply complete that by 1 if you want. And hence you get a map from this to the bigger one. ISC, I, G, GSC. And this means that you get a map from the H0, say, of I to G, to this object, which I call the H0 of I abelian I going to G abelian I. So if you, here you have an abelian group, if you have a character of that, this gives you, by composition, a map. And these are the maps, the kappa, that show up in the stabilization of the trace formula. And in fact, if I want to write the stable orbital integral, I simply have to replace this by that, and to replace the omega by kappa, because in fact, it's possible to show that any omega, thank you very much. When kappa is not there, it's a stable orbital integral, and in general, it's a kappa orbital integral. Thank you very much. Okay, and the point I wanted to make here is that, in fact, given a character omega as before, it can be extended to a character of this more funny group. And in fact, the group on which we will really rely is something slightly more fancy. The one on which really they live is the H0 AF over F of I ab to G ab. This is really this one on which the global kappa lives. Well, so this gives a framework in which you can write very naturally the first step of the stabilization of the trace formula. So let me just say in a few words what is this this first step. Where is it? Where is it? Where did I put it? Yeah. So, I have this here. So simply the first step. The first step is just that you can write the TE of f omega. It can be written as a constant, or well, another constant. I don't want to make it precise. So delta now will be in the stable conjugacy class. I will define it in a moment, of a number which is slightly different. And the sum over the kappa that give omega, that restrict to omega, of the O delta kappa of F. So here there is no more an omega. I didn't try the omega here. This is encoded in the kappa. So that's the first step. And how do you pass from one expression to the other one? Well, I have to explain in a few words what the I have to explain what is a stable conjugacy. So as it was said this morning, this is roughly speaking the conjugacy over the algebraic closure, but more precisely it is what? So you take an x and you look at x delta, x minus 1 delta x equals delta prime. Assume that delta belongs to L of f, delta prime also, and x belongs to g of f bar. Then, of course, an immediate computation will tell you that x sigma of x minus 1 belongs to g delta of f bar for all sigma in the Galois group of f bar over f. So this is automatic. So stable conjugacy is roughly that. It's just a very mild difference. You insist that this belongs to the so-called stable centralized. It makes little difference in general, but it's not the same. Apparently that's the coherent way to define stable conjugacy. At least for semi-simple elements, this is the right definition, but for all other elements, again, I don't have a clear understanding of what should be I delta. No. For regular endoscopy, for what you call regular endoscopy, I mean when there is no theta, no automorphism, when the split, when the theta star is 1, then it's G delta below. It's a connected centralizer in ordinary endoscopy. By ordinary, I mean theta different from theta equals 1. I include the omega non-trivial. Omega non-trivial should not be thought as a different kind of endoscopy, in fact. Because another thing one could do, I should maybe say it, that you can compute very easily in the ordinary case what is the I ab to G ab. What kind of object is that? If you look at, in ordinary endoscopy, when I suppose that I is a torus, so for a regular element, then, in that case, ISC is just 1. So now the G ab is quasi-isomorphic to TSC to T. So altogether, you get T going to TSC to T, and this is quasi-isomorphic to TSC going to 1. So it's just TSC shifted by 1. So you see that the abelianized cohomology of I of G mod I in the regular case and the non-twisted case is just the H0 I was interested in, is just the H1 of TSC. And you see that you don't, you have the no track of the what the group J is, but if you work from an arbitrary G with a given GSC, if you get all the same kappas, provided you allow all the omega. If you allow all the omega, you get the same set of endoscopic spaces. So that's really easy. And okay. So the first step. Now I have more or less explained all the notation. What is behind that? What is behind that? Okay. Well. Essentially, what you do is, well, I have to define this object and this object. This is a set of representative of conjugacy classes, and the one is a set of representative of stable conjugacy classes. So you work inside a stable conjugacy class, and you sum over the contribution of all delta in the same conjugacy class, and you must get the sum, it must be the same as the sum over all kappa giving omega. And this boils down simply to a Fourier inversion on a compact group. And that's really very, very easy to obtain, except that one has a few things to check behind. And the things to check behind are simply rephrasing of the result known since 40 years or 50 years due to Kneser. So one uses, in fact, the two theorems of Kneser, the local one and the global one, the so-called Asse principle for simply connected semi-simple groups. So, in fact, this equality is somehow rephrasing of Kneser's theorem. So it's not completely trivial, really. But it's very easy once you know the Kneser theorem. There is something to do, because here we work with Tamagawa numbers for mildly non-connected groups, so one has to rework a little the theory of Tamagawa number in order to encompass the case of those mildly non-connected groups. So there is some work behind, but it's rather easy, and the formalism is really somehow obvious. Okay? No, the real points precisely it's not a problem because precisely of Asse principle. Because there you use the fact that that you recover all elements in the H1 of the reals through the H1 of the global field. That's where it plays a role precisely there. So really you use exactly the full force of the Kneser theorem. Okay, so this is what is encoded here. So, okay, so what's the next step? Well, the next step is to introduce precisely the thing which is in the title of the lecture, so to try to understand the norm map. So we want to go to endoscopic groups. So, in fact, the first thing is to try to go, so you have the L, we will go to L star, and then try to go to an endoscopic group. So first I want to describe what is the correspondence here. And the correspondence here is very easy. So you start with the delta in L of S, a rational part. And you would like to get something in L star which is which looks like the norm for the base change. And what it can be. So you have a map, an isomorphism over the algebraic closure. such that phi sigma of phi minus 1 belongs to interior of L. That's an inner form. Okay? So now, if I have a delta in LF, I can look to phi of delta. This belongs to L star of F bar. And what I can do, I can conjugate this element and try. So I look at the x phi of delta x minus 1. I call it delta star. And I will try to choose the x so that the delta star has the best possible properties. So, well, in fact, since delta is rational, what you find is that phi of delta is not rational, but that the not its conjugacy class exactly, but the interior class of phi of delta, what you know, is that the interior class so the class under interior automorphism of phi of delta is rational since delta is rational. But it's not always true, unfortunately, that a rational interior class has a rational element. You would like to find a delta star which is rational. It's not always possible, but there is a weakening of this that can be fulfilled. So I say that delta star is almost rational if well, if the stable centralizer or the centralizer, it's the same, of delta star is defined over F. Of course, if the element is rational, its centralizer is rational, but the converse is not true. But it's a good approximation to it. So what I will call the something like an element which is conjugate here and with a technical condition I don't want to give immediately, I call it a prenorm. And if it satisfies this condition, I call it special. So, in fact, the result I have is that the following. So, theorem. Consider delta in L of F semi-simple, or more generally quasi-semi-simple. Then there exists an X in G of F bar, G star of F bar, such that delta star, which is X phi of delta X minus 1, is almost rational, and such that moreover, I of delta star is an inner form of I of delta, in fact, more precisely, if you look at the cochain A sigma, which is X, U sigma, sigma of X minus 1, where U sigma is the cochain that can be used to twist from G to G, from G star to G. Then the A sigma, which is of this form, can be written as B sigma and C sigma, where C sigma takes its value in I delta star, and B sigma commutes with with I delta star. It centralizes I delta star. So it means that the C precisely defines the inner form of I delta star. This is the C which comes into play. So that's the theorem, and that's the good object I was looking for. This is the special prenorm I was looking for. And I will not give you the proof for this. I will make just comments on the proof. When delta is strongly regular or regular, it's an easy consequence of a theorem which says that, which is due to Steinberg, which says that when a group G is semi-simple and simply connected, then a semi-simple rational conjugacy class has a rational element. Using that, it's very easy to prove this statement. When the element is not regular, then the proof, I have a proof I don't like, because to find something which is almost rational is not too difficult, but it becomes quite complicated to check the inner form condition. Unfortunately, I have just almost a case-by-case computation I have to look at the explicit form of the centralizer. I use the classification and I check that this is always possible. But there are not so many cases where it could be not enough. You have to go through the classification and see you reduce to two cases where you really have to do something in order to avoid that it is an outer form. So this comes from the disconnectedness of some centralizer. So with this, in fact, you're in a good shape. You can generalize the so-called Langlands Kodwitz obstruction. You can perform this, and you translate the expression above in an expression using the delta star instead of the delta. So that the second step of the stabilization of the elliptic element in the trace formula. So at that point, we are, it's not too bad. After that, it becomes very bad. Also, the next step is in part easy, in part almost impossible for the time being. What is easy is to get something in H. So what's the idea? So in fact, here we can arrange so that the delta star belongs to T star T semi-direct theta star with a T which is theta star stable, and that belongs even to a Borel pair with a B, maybe not defined over F but theta star invariant. So this sits in a G star semi-direct theta star. So you're given with a T, and in fact, if the element has this property, what you see is that the guy C sigma and B sigma, the C sigma disappears in somehow in the conjugacy for the element delta because it belongs to the centralizer. So the only thing that matters is the B sigma. And in fact, the theorem can be refined so that the B sigma belongs to T. Yeah, but in fact, the centralizer of this is might be even too big. It has to, you have to refine slightly the thing so that you control exactly what it is. But it's a bit technical and not too it's not difficult. And what you get is that in fact the conjugacy class in T is not rational, but it turns out that modulo theta, if you go to the co-invariant, to the co-invariant, then the image here will be rational. In fact, not exactly, it's rational up to a central twist. Because again, when we had the inner automorphism, I didn't write it, but you have conjugacy, you have a conjugacy and a central twist. The central twist remains, may remain, and we may have to consider a central twist. So it's the image in T theta star is rational up to a central twist. So, and the co-invariant. So here, between T and T theta, you have a conorm map, in fact. It's more a conorm map than a norm map. Okay. The point is that for base change, the invariant and the co-invariant are isomorphic. So you don't see the difference in the base change. But in general, it's not true. So one is used to think of invariants and to the norm map, but in fact, it's rather the conorm one should look at. This has been observed a long time ago by Schellstadt trying to understand the endoscopy of abelian groups. So it's very, very well known. Okay. So now the T theta star are just the tori of any endoscopic group, whatever it is. So I mean they are all of that form. And but now you're faced with problems that I will not have fortunately time to discuss. And in any case, I have nothing really serious to say on it. So once you are there, you're faced with the transfer of functions and the definition of the transfer factors. And on this topic, I have nothing new to say. And all I can say is that most of what can be said on the general case has been done by Kodwitz and Schellstadt. And I have not a word to add. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.